Well, hey, Brad, welcome to the show. I really appreciate you, taking some time to talk to us this afternoon and evening and talking to our audience. I'd love for you to just introduce yourself.
Thanks, Ben. I appreciate it. So I'm Brad. I have been living in Oregon for quite some time, 53 years old as of last August. Love the outdoors. I love everything that Oregon offers from that perspective. I'm a huge outdoors person. I love getting backpacking, hiking, basically all of it, boating, whatever. I've been riding motorcycles since I was 9 years old, so a long, long, long time. It's one of the things that I have a definite passionate for, just like the outdoors and backpacking. I know we connected because out of the blue, a little over 3 years ago, so it was March, end of March, beginning of April, I had a stroke. The situation, I can describe it like perfectly. I was on my way to Moab, for 8 days of motorcycle riding, adventure riding in the backcountry, and was on the phone. And the person that I was on the phone with noticed my slurred speech. I had no idea what was going on, but, noticed my slurred speech and told me to pull over and call 911. And seriously, I was about half an hour outside of Boise, on highway Interstate 84 heading eastbound, doing 70 miles an hour in my truck with, again, two motorcycles loaded up in the back for 8 days of riding, all the camp gear and everything else. It just happened.
What was that initial shock like when your friend was like, hey, pull over, kind of call 911? And like, could you walk us through that process of like calling 911 and then having to sit there and then maybe kind of your perception throughout that entire
So event? Actually, I did not call 911. I pulled over and the person I was on the phone with hung up and called 911 and reached the dispatcher in a small town of Idaho called, I think, Mountain Home. And they dispatched the ambulance to come pick me up. And by the time the ambulance showed up, I could not speak. I lost the complete ability to speak. And, I had no idea what was going on. I mean, I didn't, it's fortunate. I didn't suffer, a loss of balance. I did have facial droop, and I completely lost the ability to speak. So when the paramedics showed up, they basically had me get out of the truck. They loaded me in the ambulance and drove me to Mountain Home Hospital, where they had no idea what was going on. They had an idea, but it wasn't shared with me. They administered, which basically was the reason why I'm here today, and able to speak and able to function. It's called a clot busting drug. I don't recall the exact name, but they administered that in the small hospital. And they put me on a helicopter, a life flight helicopter, and flew me to St. Anthony's Hospital in Boise, where I spent the next 6 days in the ICU.
Okay, so that was pretty quick. You got the medication. Then, like you said, it was 6 days in the hospital. Didn't they have to do any surgery?
No surgery. So my blood pressure and all vital signs were completely jacked up. I will never forget this as long as I live. I had to lay flat on my back for the first 36 hours, which is anybody that's had to go to the bathroom knows that's not an easy task. And I couldn't communicate. I could not utter a single word. I could only nod. And that was That was terrifying.
I was going to ask you, what was going through your head with something like that? I mean, because that's a scary sensation, right? You mean you get that your friend is like, your voice sounds different, pull over. Then they call 911 and all of a sudden your face starts to droop. You can't speak. You can't really communicate. And you're having to try to communicate with the paramedics and things. So I'm kind of curious, like, what is going through your head?
I think abject terror. I mean, honestly, it was, and I'm a marketing professional, so I speak quite a bit for a living, giving presentations and talking to sales and anything else like that. So that was one of like not the main concern, but it was just terrifying. Like the sudden loss of the ability to express any thoughts whatsoever or like fully understand what's going on was, like I said, it's abject terror. I was terrified. I mean, it's still, I mean, I'm getting sweaty palms right now just thinking about it.
I gotcha. And then, so once it's all said and done, you said you spent the 6 days in the ICU. Did you transfer to like an inpatient facility or like inpatient rehab, or did you go right to kind of like an outpatient?
No. So, I left Boise after 6 days, came home. I took the next 3 weeks off of work and then started intense speech therapy as well as, I mean, I can't tell you how many MRIs, and CAT scans and ultrasounds and other medical imaging things that I've had done since 2021. Yeah. A lot.
All right, so it's been a couple of years. Yeah.
Yeah. It's been a lot.
So what was your experience like with rehab?
The biggest part of rehab for me was speech therapy. And that was phenomenal. The speech therapist I worked with, did a fantastic job. Put the onus on me a lot of the time. I mean, it's like, okay, we're going to cover these in this session, but you're going to have to go home and do your homework. And it was like, seriously, it was hard homework. I mean, I cannot accurately describe how difficult it was to reform the connections in my brain for speech. And I still, like, when I get stressed out or when I get tired or nervous, so you'll probably hear me because I'm a bit nervous, stumble on words. And it is, I mean, the brain is a wonderful, like, amazing thing, right? The fact that it was able to reroute the blood flowing to my brain, right? So I suffered a carotid, left side carotid artery dissection. And it, you know, found a way to reroute the blood. And the paths of communication were also, they had to be retrained, but they were reformed to the point where you can see me talking and you can hear me talking, you know, mostly intelligently, but, you know, logically and so on and so forth. So that was the most intense part.
Yeah. I got you. And I think that's incredible, right? Because you just had the speech therapist and like, yeah, you had to do the homework, but it is fascinating in the human body and like how you can relearn so many things. And so I'm actually in physical therapy school right now. And what's really interesting is because we're going over working with neurological patients. So people with like Parkinson's, people that have suffered with strokes, other things like that, people that have MS. And it's just really interesting that you can see the benefits of what they call like not muscle memory but motor learning, and you can apply that and the brain just relearns things and makes these new connections. And like you said, it's just fascinating, and we can nerd out all day if you really wanted to. It's just incredible like what we humans and our body are capable of.
And you know, to be honest, and this is not to slight anybody else out there who has experienced a stroke, but you know, from a physical standpoint, speech aside, I'm really lucky, and because I do it myself. I mean, I was honestly in the best shape of my life when this stroke hit, and that helped me overcome the physical manifestations with, you know, I was back to the gym working out like the week I got back to Portland, to where I live. So, you know, being active, physically active, and making sure, you know, eating healthy and all of the things that we're supposed to do, I truly believe that helped me get over the symptoms of the stroke much faster than perhaps somebody that doesn't have that kind of healthy lifestyle.
Yeah, I think that's a perfect depiction, right? Because I mean, I think people need to understand the importance of like maintaining healthy. And like, that's not to say that you have to go to the gym 5 days, 6 days, 7 days a week, right? Like, you know, you ride dirt bikes, you hike, you do camping, like you do outdoor stuff. You're physically active. And I'm sure you get to the gym occasionally and maybe do running. Like you have your own setup, but I do think it's important to kind of hit that fact that like staying active is key, right? And making it enjoyable. And I'd love to kind of dive into all your hobbies, especially your dirt biking, because you said you know, been doing it since you were 9 years old. And so I'm really just curious, like, how do you develop a passion like that? And what about that sport that like really just speaks to your soul? And then having that stroke was like the goal, like, hey, I'm going to get back on the bike again.
Yeah, that was a huge goal because, you know, the neurologist was very anti riding motorcycles, mainly because, you know, the stress of wearing a helmet and being jolted around on motorcycles is not conducive to maintaining artery consistency. So yeah, that was a huge goal. Motorcycling for me is one of the purest forms of freedom. I have, you know, I started off, like I said, 9 years old, riding dirt bikes. I progressed to riding street bikes. I instructed on the racetrack for many years, not racing, but it's called track day instruction. So I instructed, you know, newer riders how to ride their street motorcycles in a safe environment as quickly as possible around a racetrack with, you know, conditions that are known, not like street riding. It's just very conditions are unknown. And then in the last close to 10 years, I got into adventure riding. So essentially riding up, I ride a street legal dirt bike. And that has given me the ability to travel places most people will never, ever go. And it's a form of, again, freedom and exploration that is just unmatched in everyday transportation.
Could you dive deeper into the adventure riding? Because like it's something that I've never explored or looked into, and I'd love to learn more because I feel like there's probably areas where you can do that, and there's probably areas where it's like, hey, you don't go and you don't go ride there.
Let me see how to answer or think on how to answer that. So basically, adventure riding, you know, there are all kinds of, well, the different levels are different forms. I mean, for me personally, adventure riding involves packing everything I need to live on my motorcycle and going out for however much time I can do so. So, I mean, the first ride that I had post-stroke was this summer in July. I took, you know, it's been a 2.5 year or so hiatus from riding motorcycles at all. I loaded all my camp gear and then did a 8-day, 1,500-ish mile ride in southeastern Oregon. And it was as amazing and satisfying as it's always been. And, you know, I have ambitions to load up and ride to Ushuaia, Argentina on, you know, like a long adventure ride taking a year or more. And there are lots of people that I follow on the adventure riding community that are doing round the world trips. You know, they've done, you know, flown their bike from place to place and ridden the entire continent in Africa. They've ridden the entire, you know, South America, Central America, North America, like up to Alaska. I mean, there's pretty much, you know, the world has definitely shrunk, but there are still a lot of places to explore. You know, if I think about a buddy of mine, rode from Madrid, Spain to Mongolia, just by himself through Russia. You know, he's Spanish, so it was a little bit easier. And this was, yeah, before some of the chaos, you know, the Ukrainian war. But anyway, I mean, there are all kinds of potential opportunities to get out and explore, you know, and overlanding has become huge. I mean, like lots of people are overlanding and getting out there in the big, you know, I almost said ass. Big old 4x4s. And that limits your capacity to go places. Motorcycles don't have those limits. So that is one of the huge appeals for me.
Yeah, that's really interesting that you want to drive from where you're at to all the way down to Argentina. That would be an incredible trip to do that. Do you have like a set friends you would do that with, or would you do that solo?
Yeah, probably solo.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's awesome. So what was it like kind of getting back in to the driver's seat after that stroke and your first ride back? I mean, because, you know, you talk about it's like freedom to you is getting on that bike, exploring the world. And so I imagine that it was just, you know, awe-inspiring, or it was just amazing to be back in home, basically.
Yeah, I would say it was a combination of like extreme excitement tempered with extreme caution. It was scary. It was, you know, because in all honesty, I mean, and this was an interesting conversation. You know, I can go back, and think about the conversations I had with the neurologist and the, vascular surgeon who is taking over kind of my case, so to speak. And, you know, the neurologist was like, no riding because there's too much of a risk. The vascular surgeon says, yeah, you have a risk. You know, we don't know. So they know what caused the stroke. I had a dissection in my carotid artery, and then further MRI showed multiple other issues. And, you know, it was, sorry, I'm going off tangent, but I think one of the most disheartening kind of level set conversations I've ever had was the neurologist saying, hey, you know, the latest MRI showed basically you should be dead. I should have suffered. So I had a left side carotid artery. Apparently they didn't, well, something happened between the stroke and about June timeframe of 2021. And the MRIs showed a severe dissection in the right side of my carotid artery. And the neurologist was like, I don't know how you're still alive. Or, you know, a paraplegic or, you know, a complete vegetable. So that was sobering to say the least. So I understand his trepidation in me wanting to ride because, you know, nobody knows what the cause of the dissections is. They think there is something called fibromuscular dysplasia, which is a deterioration of the arterial structure of the human body, but there's no cause, and worse, there's no cure. So anyway, all that to say, you know, the conversations with the neurologist were always, and he is a great guy. The vascular surgeon says, hey, yeah, okay, we don't know what caused it. We don't know if it's going to happen again. You can live your life in that fear state, or you can just go live your life because you're going to die eventually. And that's kind of been my MO, right? I'm like, I'm going to die and I don't want to live in fear. So that was kind of what played into that when I first jumped on the bike after getting it loaded, it was extreme excitement tempered by the very, very real fear of the unknown.
That's awesome. Yeah, I think that is crazy, right? Because it's a 50-50 chance. And like you said, I mean, we're all going to die one day. And so, like, do you want to live in fear or do you want to just continue doing what you love doing? And, you know, most people, you would hope most people would choose to continue living, doing what they're doing. And however, sometimes it is easier to be guided by fear, unfortunately. Yeah,
it is.
But that's awesome. I'm so excited to like follow your journey when you start like posting stuff about your Argentina trip. That's going to be incredible. Like I can imagine right now the freedom that's going to be like to just take a year off and to just ride a bike and see parts of America and other countries that like have never been explored before, or like have been, but like someone, you know, stuck in Charlotte, North Carolina, or, you know, Raleigh or anything like that, or, you know, up in Portland has like not ever seen before. I mean, it's incredible.
Yeah. I mean, the experience of exposing yourself to new cultures, kind of understanding the people. I mean, that's, you know, one of the things about adventure riding is it's so fun and so enriching is the folks that you run into, especially when you're traveling alone. I mean, I've done a couple of solo trips this past July. The trip that I did was with a couple buddies. So I wasn't traveling alone. But you get the interactions with people that are genuine and you get to see them in their environments and, you know, be respectful, but that experience is very eye-opening in my belief. And I haven't even traveled. I mean, that's not entirely true. I mean, I've done some adventure ride or a adventure ride down in Baja in Mexico, but nothing like, you know, Central America or South America.
Yeah, I love how you talk about it. It's like genuine interactions, right? Because that's just what we as humans want, and that's what we crave. And like to be able to experience that, it's a totally different level, like especially when you experience it in the person. So I love talking about that, and you know, you sharing like your experience with that. It's like really incredible because, like I said, not a lot of people get to do that, you know, and like a lot of people are guided by fear. And I think that's something, because like my goal is to travel PT when I get out, and like I'm just super excited to just drive around, go work for a couple months, and then just like explore.
Yeah, there's nothing like it, man.
Could you kind of go into what the community like is? Because I'm familiar with rock climbing and like the outdoor community, but I'm kind of curious like what the community is like for adventure riding and things like that. I feel like it's very unique and special.
It is. So, I mean, one of the things, one of the benefits that I have living where I live, because there's great riding around here, I have opened my house and it's known amongst the adventure riding community that, you know, I have a place to stay. You know, I had a friend, like an unknown friend at the time, but he lives in Austria, and, you know, he reached out and said, hey, I'm doing, like, literally he rode his dirt bike. And this is like a Truon, like a Honda 450 dirt bike around the world. And he, you know, he flew over after riding Europe, because he's Austrian. He flew his bike over, did Canada, rode up to Alaska. And then on his way down to Ushuaia, he stayed with me for 5 days and, you know, had parts shipped here so he could work on his bike to prepare it for the leg down to Central and South America. And that's just one example. I mean, the adventure riding community, you know, there are some oddballs within any community, that's going to be the case. But generally speaking, there are these are the people that go out of the way to help other people. Whether they're riding motorcycles or not, I mean, they're going to be open. They want to help. They want to explore. And they love the idea of travel. So I think all of that, I mean, there are a lot of idioms I suppose I could use in describing the community, but all of my interactions have been super positive. Everybody, and I've had multiple people stay with me over the years, and they've all been fantastic. And I, you know, I haven't taken advantage of that hospitality on the other end yet, but I fully plan on it when I, you know, when I get on my trip, like a big trip.
Yeah, I think that's what, and like, this is not knocking other sports and things like that, but I feel like with the outdoor community, you know, like you said, with adventure riding, it's like you just find the second family. I mean, I don't know how many people that like have couches I've crashed on that like I went on a climbing trip with, or people I just kind of met, and then you go out and have a beer after climbing all day. It's just cool, you know, and you meet these people and like you might not never see them again. But then again, you know, like you're telling you got your house that's open to those people, and they know that. And I think that's the big
thing. Yeah. I mean, and you know, like just a case in point, this past summer, one of the adventure riders who lives in Vermont just reached out to me and said, hey, I'm taking my kids out for like summer vacation thing. I'm not riding my motorcycle, but do you have any recommendations on things to like see, or, you know, and I've got a quasi tour guide for hotspots in Oregon to visit, but his name's Jeremy. So Jeremy and his two kids, son and daughter, stayed with me for 3 days they did a huge loop around Oregon, and they stayed with me the three last days, and we just had a blast. I mean, it's that kind of community, you know, that, again, you talk about genuine interactions. That's exactly what it was like.
Did you ever imagine, like, when you got into dirt bikes and motorcycles that you would ever be in this kind of community doing this kind of stuff?
Not ever. I mean, back when I was riding street, and especially the track, I mean, we had a very tight-knit group of people that rode street bikes, and then also like on the track specifically, I mean, that was a very tight-knit group of folks that, you know, I'm still very good friends with. Most all of them have moved on from track riding and street bike riding to adventure riding. It seems like a natural evolution. I don't know what's natural about it. But yeah, no, but I never ever envisioned doing anything like this. Now it's just progressed as it has. And the passion has never, like the flames that fuel that passion have never really wavered.
Yeah. And I think that's, you know, you make an interesting point, like the passion waves have never wavered. I think that is hard for a lot of people to experience that or to like say that, you know, because I notice with rock climbing, because some people get into the competition and they're like, oh, they get like kind of a lot of external validation. You get so into the training and things like that, that you kind of lose the fun. But I feel like with adventure riding, like it's all fun because you're just, it's a constant exploration off the beaten path.
Yeah. That is one of the beautiful things about it.
So what was your first ever trip like when you did your first adventure ride, like even before the stroke and like you were kind of getting into it?
The first adventure ride I did was down in Death Valley. So I drove with a buddy, was it 19 hours straight through from where I live down to Death Valley. And then just, you know, we set up a base camp and, well, kind of a base camp and then explored Death Valley, which is something that I've done. I haven't done in the last couple of years, but I did that. Four different years. And Death Valley National Park is an amazing place, not in the summertime, but like spring and fall, it is like super cool. And that was the first time, my first exposure to being able to camp off my bike. You know, we set up a base camp, but then we did rides and we would camp a couple nights out in the various parts of the park. So it was a very good introduction to adventure riding. It was a blast. Not to mention the environment and the terrain down in Death Valley is totally different than the west side of the Cascades in Oregon.
Do you mind elaborating on that? Like what the terrain is like? I mean, I know it's kind of like desert and things like that, but I'd love to kind of hear your
perspective. It's desert, really rocky, very sparsely, like around me. I have huge trees. Those aren't the same down in Death Valley, but they have Joshua trees, right? And you get down to those areas. And the desert is just is an amazing place. It's full of life. It is inhospitable, especially again in the summertime. But the hot springs that we visited, the different washes from the, you know, when it does flood, it floods really badly. So you get those washes that carving canyons like Titus Canyon is one of the most spectacular things I've ridden through in my life. I mean, it's like huge 1,000, 1,500 foot cliff walls that you're riding through this wash and you can't see anything else but the track in front of you. I mean, it is next level cool and very, very unique.
Does the bike handle a little bit different compared to like where you're at and then when you rode down Death Valley?
Yeah. When you're dealing with a soft surface like sand and deep gravel, that's way different than riding in Oregon where you have typically hard pack. You know, Eastern Oregon, Southeastern Oregon has a lot of sand and they have there's another thing called gumbo mud, which is a different story. But yeah, it was very different but being able to manage the bike in that environment relative to, you know, typical riding around the Pacific Northwest.
Brad, man, I appreciate you just talking about all this. This is incredible. You're like hyping me up for when it's my turn to go travel.
I hope so, man. Yeah. There is something very, very special about being able, and on a motorcycle specifically, I mean, you are in the elements. You're not like, and this is nothing against people who take road trips, right? You're not in a protected environment in a car. On a motorcycle, you are part of the environment. And that's, you know, that's why one of the reasons I really, really enjoy and love adventure riding. And it's akin for me, you know, backpacking is another passion. You know, when I go backpacking, you know, you have everything that you need on your back and you are in the environment. Right? You're not a passenger in the environment. You are actually part of the environment. And, you know, backpacking in the 2.5 year hiatus that I was not riding. I mean, I've always been a backpacker, but that that didn't fulfill the need, but that really, really became just as important as a passion as adventure writing.
Yeah, because there's nothing like just being out in the middle of nowhere in the woods and then getting pouring down rain hit you, whether on a bike or even, I mean, on a bike, it's got to be a little bit worse, you know, because you're riding right into it, you know, 60 plus miles per hour, depending on how fast you're going. But then, like I said, you got the hiking too, or backpacking, you got your food, your tent, things like that, and just you can't escape it, even if exactly. you're in the trees.
Yeah, and sometimes you don't want to be in the trees.
Right. Oh, man. And so I'm kind of curious, kind of ending, you know, conversation and stuff, what kind of legacy do you hope to leave behind?
That's a deep loaded question, man.
It is.
I guess for me, I have two boys. The legacy I would like to leave behind is, in today's connected world and all of the social media BS, I think people, and this is just my opinion, I think folks have lost the ability to connect with nature. I think folks have lost the ability to unplug and just go experience nature, whether that's on an adventure bike, whether that's backpacking or hiking. The legacy I would like to leave is, you know, A, don't live in fear of what if. Plan for the what ifs, but don't live in fear of them. And live your life and make sure you respect the nature, you know, this planet that we are all on. And enjoy everything that you can in a respectful manner.
Yeah, I think that's phenomenal advice. And I think you're right, you know, in the aspect of the digital world, like I think I've heard it said, like, in a place that we're so connected, we're actually not that connected, right? You know? And I think it's lost on people if you want to go down the road of the healing aspects of nature, but really just like you can tell the difference when you spend an hour, 2 hours, whether it's even if it's at a local state park, going outside, hearing the birds, walking around, getting some physical activity going, versus sitting in a chair in front of a computer and just looking at a screen. I mean, you can tell the difference.
And you know, to that point specifically, I don't know if we're going to run out of time, but, you know, like I said, pre-stroke, I was always an outdoorsman, outdoors person, avid hiker, avid backpacker. After I had the stroke, when I got home, and as I was going through speech therapy, the need to be in the outdoors, not necessarily the wilderness, you know, backpacking for 8 days, but the need to be in the wilderness became visceral. It was something, and it continues to this day. If anything, it's gotten worse, not worse in a bad way, but just worse. I mean, my desire to disconnect and go into nature and hear the sounds of a stream or hear the birds or just the wind through the trees, those simple things, those simple pleasures in life have become far more important post-stroke than I wouldn't have considered them to the extent that I do now pre-stroke.
Yeah, I think you make an interesting point, like how, you know, I mean, yeah, it was you know, you had that stroke and now it feels like everything's important, but I think it's just, I'm trying to see how I can say it, but it's like people that haven't experienced it, it's hard to explain it because they haven't experienced it, but like when you have been out in nature and you spent days out in the woods, whether it's backpacking or you spent days climbing or other things like that, like just being out there, it's so surreal and you can't explain the connection you feel with Mother Nature. And I envy the people that maybe never get a chance to do that because it just feels kind of like you made that comment that it's freeing, you know, doing your adventure bike, it's freeing to be out in nature because it's like where we're from because we're biological creatures, you know? And I think that's what's incredible. And the earth is what gives us life. So like, yeah, it's like incredible just being out there.
Yep, I agree wholeheartedly.
Awesome. Brad, this has just been a phenomenal conversation, man. I appreciate you, again, just sharing some time with us to tell us about your story. And I love learning about adventure riding. Like, I'm kind of stoked for some traveling in the future. So thank you for that.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you reaching out, and I appreciate what you're doing. That is, and if, you know, I'm happy to talk about stroke stuff, any point in time, if there can be additional awareness built, I'm all about that, because I wouldn't wish this upon anybody. I mean, it, you know, it's been obviously a very big life-changing event for me personally, but building awareness around, you know, the signs, you know, that I think is, you know, the biggest enemy for a stroke victim is time, you know? So the faster that somebody can get help, the more likely that they are to recover and go on and live a full life.
Yeah. And I think that's important, right? I think the biggest thing, and you said it, was the time. I mean, it is a time crunch, like the medication you got. I think it's, according to my educational resources, it's like roughly a 4-hour window from the time, like, you have the onset to get into a hospital, getting the medication. And like, that's not to say that, like, you know, if you missed a 4-hour window, you can't still come out from a stroke. I mean, there is rehab, and research is always coming out with new and improved things and stuff like that. And that's the great thing about medical research.
Right. Yeah. Know? Yeah.
And so going forward, I just want to make sure people can follow you on Instagram and stuff like that, and we can see your adventure stories when you post every so often.
That sounds good, man. I appreciate it.